The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
We're joined for the week trending by Laura Byrne, who is column editor and podcast producer at thejournal.ie, and Dave Hanratty, host of the Encore podcast. Dave, I'm going to start with you because it's always something that mystified me, is that how can people after an expensive weekend at the Electric Picnic be in a position by the following Wednesday to buy out the tickets for next year?
Clever planning, strategy, loyalty, all those things. People who have now decided that they can't go a single year without going back to Stradbally. The pull of this festival is genuinely incredible because you can predict this. It is, you know it's going to happen. That's another reason, because you know if I don't get a ticket straight away, I'll have to look for a resale market or try and find one off a friend. It's going to sell out straight away on name value alone. And we won't even have a lineup announcement until next year. So it actually has this exceptional continual pull that doesn't seem to be in any signs of slowing down soon. In fact, Melvin Benn was saying that while there isn't an imminent, I guess, plan to increase the number, which has gone up and up and up, it's now 75,000 people, there's still the talk that that could happen. It could go even higher than that.
But you see, Laura, that still doesn't answer my question, Dave, because, Laura, the question is, where do people have the money? I mean, I don't know of anyone, particularly amongst my children, who is sufficiently well sorted out to plan that they have 250 or 290 quid available to them the Wednesday after Electric Picnic to be able to buy next year's ticket.
Well, I'm sorry, I totally agree with you, Matt, because I was saying to Dave, I went to the picnic from 2005 to 2020 and I've sort of slowed up a little bit, but even back in the heyday, there's not a hope. It's like an endurance test, so it would take me at least 10 days to get over it, let alone be able to afford to buy a loaf of bread that week.
Or to be able to remember 3 or 4 days later that there's another ticket to be bought.
So I have to admire the picnickers and how focused they are, and they really were focused this week. Things got off to a bit of a rocky start. You know, sometimes when you go on to Ticketmaster and everybody is in the same boat, there is a scheme that the picnic has that, you know, it's like a loyalty scheme. If you've been, you get a code. There was a bit of a tricky issue with that. I think, you know, I know Dave, you're probably more across that, but they were a bit unhappy. It kind of leveled itself off in the end and people did get tickets, but some people weren't so happy on the day.
Yeah, a couple of hiccups was the exact phraseology used in the kind of statement that went out by the picnic themselves on their social media accounts. You had reports on social media of fans who had the loyalty thing, because they've been going for so long, that they should be top of the queue, essentially, saying that they weren't, that they were kind of back of the queue or they couldn't get access, and by the time they finally did get access, either those tickets were gone and the only ones left were more expensive ones, or they couldn't get tickets at all. So there was a statement put out and it said, you know, trying to make the best of it, it kind of referred to, like, you know, we'll see the lucky ones, quote, there next time. And it's like, well, I appreciate that you're trying to kind of, you know, put some levity and frivolity on top of this, but there are some very, very angry customers who've been going to that festival for years and feel that they have been shortchanged, whether it was a glitch, who knows? I mean, like, that's what the language is coming out from the picnic side anyway.
It does seem a bit harder than it used to be to get the resale ones, though. You know, I think I remember, like, you know, WhatsApp messages, Facebook groups. It was easy to buy a ticket closer to the festival. I feel like that's difficult now. Maybe there's a lot more kind of resellers in there, and, you know, maybe not the best.
But also the point that Dave makes, that nobody knows who's going to be on the list of acts to enjoy, because you weren't there this year. Were you there, Dave?
I was not, no. I think my picnic days are over for some time, and certainly not based on the lineup that we just had. I thought it was quite shoddy, but like I say, if it sells out immediately, I hesitate to say that they don't have to try. I'm sure everyone who books for the festival is in fact trying to get the greatest artist that they can, but and Ireland remains at one of those difficult places that you have other festivals that are more attractive and cost less money to go to perform at, and they also have some other kind of festivals, maybe like eating the picnic's lunch. I mean, like, all together they looked really good this year. There was a dearth, I thought, of superstars at Picnic, Kylie aside. Although, you know, the ones that were there did draw huge crowds. But I guess...
Well, if you're there, you're going to go and see things. You're going to go and enjoy them. Yeah. I'm just looking at the list, actually. The first festival was a one-day event in 2004. In it included Too Many DJs, Groove Armada, Arrested Development, Jurassic 5, Grandmaster Flash, Super Furry Animals, Plump DJs, Soul Wax and Milo. The following year was the first time it became a weekend festival, and it expanded to 30,000 tickets, which also sold out in advance. And can I suggest that they should actually reassemble the 2005 lineup for 2025?
Now, I would go to that one.
Because it had, for example, Kraftwerk, Fatboy Slim, The Flaming Lips, Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, Mercury Rev, Arcade Fire, Soul Wax, Too Many DJs again, Damien Dempsey, Lemon Jelly, The Human League, LCD Sound System, Hot Chip, James Blunt, and a Goldfrapp. It goes on and on and on.
You also have the situation, though, there were a lot of the names that you mentioned, such as Nick Cave, who has an upcoming gig, LCD Sound System, who I was at in Malahide Castle this year, year are kind of just doing their own thing. Like, they're still working with the same promoters a lot of the time, but they either have carved out a world tour that can't incorporate a trip to Strad Valley on that weekend, or they're just like, we're going to do our own thing over here, and that's our show, and that's it.
Well, so, I think, and Nick Cave played it all together now last year. I think we saw him there, was it, or the year before. Like, it's that, I mean, that is the golden lineup 2005. But I suppose when you think about it, things have changed. The music industry has changed. Maybe bands are doing their own thing. And I suspect with the Picnic, if they get one massive name like Kylie, it doesn't necessarily matter to the organisers as much about the big names, because I think they're selling the experience. I mean, I'm not involved in the decision making, obviously, but that's my sense of it, that it matters less these days.
It sells out on name value alone. It's an event. People want to go to the event. And if you get a good lineup all the same, and people will get mad when the next lineup comes out, but they will still have full capacity next year, guaranteed.
Okay, right, let's move on. Shane in Talla wants to know, did Enoch Burke turn up for school again today?
I think he did today as well. We were just saying yesterday, a very smart person in our newsroom was saying, oh, the seasons are changing, school is back, and it must be time for Enoch to come back. It's difficult.
This is the third school year, isn't it? Because it would have been 2 years ago this started. He went back last time. So this is the third school year. This is Wilson's Hospital, Multifarnham in County Westmeath. And he is on release from jail. He was imprisoned because he refused to give up his contempt of court. He was released on humanitarian grounds, but told, if you do this again, you go back to jail. So has he been arrested yet?
No, not that we know of. And I think that warrants saying again that he was imprisoned because of a court order, or he was in breach of a court order, not because of his stance on any sort of issue, how he addresses students. And that's very important to repeat, because that Enoch Burke and his family would like everyone to believe that that's why he was in Mountjoy. He doesn't make any bones about the fact that he wasn't happy in Mountjoy and he wouldn't like to go back. But of course, if he keeps showing up to the gates of this school, this is the inevitability.
Do you admire his dogged, Dave, and his adherence to principle?
I admire absolutely nothing about the man, I'll be honest with you, because he was making the point as well that he was saying, like, oh, he brought up the LGBTQ plus agenda, as he phrased it. And I find myself wondering, what is that agenda? I mean, like, does my brother have an agenda? I don't think so. I think my brother's just gay. Like, that's who he is as a person. And to try and
it's not very Christian, is it?
Well,
ironically.
Enoch Burke, in the quotes I saw of him today outside the school from this week, was saying that actually it goes against his Christian beliefs, because I don't believe in that, is what he's saying. But what is it that he doesn't believe in? An entire community, millions and millions of people who have human rights just like he does. So I can never support that. And I do think as well that while this is easy to make a joke of, and I know we've even seen, you know, lads on stag parties like doing the Enoch Burke pose or something, this is getting to a point where, like, it must be incredibly disruptive for the students. It already has been. I mean, like I feel like the reason that we keep having this conversation is because it's an ongoing issue. But he has said, this is where I need to be.
See, you said there, Laura, during the break, should we just be ignoring this entirely, pretending it doesn't happen, as if he wasn't getting the media attention, he would go away. I suspect he wouldn't go away. This isn't about media attention, for much as he likes being in the media. The key issue is he wants to continue to cause the trouble for the school. He wants to prove that he's right, and he seems to believe that he could go back teaching despite the fact that the school has let him go.
Well, I have to say in the Journal newsroom, we had a long discussion about it yesterday. Will we cover the fact that he's there, and will we wait until he's arrested? And we decided yesterday, okay, we'll just leave him for now. We're feeding into the message that he would like, put out there. But he's going to show up, clearly. And you have to think about the students and the faculty at the school. It must be so upsetting and disruptive. Inevitably, he will be arrested, I'd imagine, coming up soon. And that, again, will probably lead us to the whole rigmarole again, and we'll have to all witness it unfold again. You probably noticed during the week, the family also had an issue with On Post and their vans and the messaging on their vans dropping off mail and that. And so I don't think Enoch Burke and his family are going to change their stance on any of this. I suppose we have to kind of be cautious in how we approach it. That would be my feeling on it.
So the guys we covered during the week, which I think is worth returning to, is the RSA's advert campaign, which suggests that young men who could put off the road for bad driving become a burden on their friends and family, that they actually have to be carried around on people's backs. We had Nasa Horrigan, the Green Party TD, complaining about this during the week. What do you think, Dave?
I can see both sides, and not to, I don't mean to sit on the fence here at all. I think that they shot themselves in the foot by using the word burden, because there's a 30-second spot, and it does depict, as you said, it has those moments, and it's kind of played for laughs too, as much as you can when it comes to the issue of road safety, which obviously in this country we know is a massive issue and is essentially kind of, if you ask me, it's a bit of a national emergency. But I think using the word burden and kind of saying that, you know, the onus is on you. Yeah, the onus is on you is one thing, but putting blame on people and saying that, you know, you will become a burden if you can't drive. It does. You're talking about a lot of people in the country who can't drive for various different reasons, whether it's disability related, whether there's an illness involved. Some people who just, you know, someone like myself, who I'm in a position where I don't drive. I've no issue. I've no desire to learn how to drive. Now I recognise that that's privilege.
And who you were burdened on then, Dave?
The public transport services, Dublin Bus, I guess. But I like
sure
a bus.
You're paying them good money. For
I
it.
Absolutely am. But no, like I grew up in a town where I never needed to learn how to drive. I didn't live in a rural space, so I recognise that that is a privileged position to be in, and also. I don't have a fear of cars, but I would feel safer on a plane than I would in a car. That's just my own kind of thing. And even from working in the media and reporting on constant road crash stories, I do think that the reaction to this has been massive and huge, and maybe it should be. The Road Safety Authority are in a difficult position because they do have to stress that this is an important element of things, and there is a massive fear most people of losing their license, but I do think that they could have phrased it better.
I feel the same. I do have sympathy for the RSA. I feel they're damned if they do and they're damned if they don't. They were under pressure to do more of this to really make an impact. I was just chatting earlier about how I remember when I worked in this station and we had the likes of Gay Byrne and Noel Brett heading the RSA, and we were at press conferences every week for the RSA. They were constant. They had a very well-run media space there, and maybe there's a little bit of catching up to do here, and whatever happened with this ad, I think the intentions were probably good, but it just wasn't tested, it wasn't thought through maybe properly. There is a real point to be made, obviously, about inclusion and about, you know, disability and all of that, and I take that on board, but I feel for the RSA because things are so dire out there.
Okay, but isn't the point of advertising at times to get noticed? And hasn't this gotten noticed, even if it has offended people? Is that offence less than the benefit that might accrue from making people aware that if they do depend on their car for driving, that they mightn't necessarily have others who will be able to ferry them around, particularly in rural Ireland?
Potentially, and it could be that nobody would even have seen it or heard of it at all. Absolutely, I take that point. At the same time, the onus is on the individual, and you should already respect the rules of the road and human frailty out there as it is, but these messages are the ones that can get through. It was very didactic, though, in how it was initially kind of put out. But again, as you say, they're in a very tough position.
I do think the demographic matters here, and they are trying to get to maybe the young male driver, the guy who might be putting the foot down on the back roads a bit too often. And, you know, I don't know if they're going to be a little bit more mindful because of the issue around it this week, but they're difficult to get to. They're probably not listening to us right now as much as maybe 15 years ago.
I mean, every life lost is a tragedy for the person, for their families, their friends left behind. And we also often forget there's many people who are left very seriously injured, who don't die and who have life-limiting or conditions that stay with them for the rest of their life. But could it be as well, though, that the figures are not quite as bad as they seem, in the sense that the population has actually increased quite dramatically over the last decade or so? So given that there are more people on the roads now, that you're likely to have more incidents?
I think that's kind of an easy out, really, Matt, to be honest. We had a great piece there a few months ago by former Chief Super John O'Brien, and he was really looking at the policing model when it comes to road safety and how it has changed and how he felt it had disimproved drastically in the last 20-odd years, and that he felt that it was a deliberate hands-off approach. And we all know, if we're driving, I've driven for a long time, you probably you know what it's like when you're on all of the main roads all around the country. You see them. I was living in Wicklow for a year last year. I was like a devil. I just wanted to ring I wanted to ring and report so many people. I can't get over the tailgating, the speeding. I mean, it just feels like there's a sense of kind of lawlessness around there.
Somebody else says an adult in rural Ireland who can't drive is either a burden to someone or else they are isolated.
Well, see, that's the thing. And like I say, that's why I speak from my own position of not having had that life experience. So it's a much different situation when someone actually physically needs to drive or needs to cannot go anywhere without a car. At the same time, though, you have to understand that there are people who, you know, might be terrified of even getting on the road, and like, what's the solution for them? We don't have an adequate public transport system across the country. We've had so many situations, whether it's something as extravagant as the Metrolink or whether it's just a working service that actually goes across the country. Time and time again, people in this country have been let down by the government's empty promises on this. We know this. And something like this, while, yeah, it might take some extreme advertising, even if they didn't intend it. If it does have a positive effect, that's a good thing.
A listener has an idea to deal with Enoch Burke inspired by the unpulsed LGBTQ plus vans, that the school should paint the gates and the walls outside in the colours of LGBTQ plus, and therefore he wouldn't want to stand in front of them. A story that's been going around since yesterday afternoon, Dave, is the sacking by the BBC of the former footballer turned pundit Jermaine Genas. What's going on here?
This is a very curious story. So Jermaine Genas has been presenting the one show on BBC, that kind of tea time, I guess, variety hour for a while. And he is a football pundit, a football co-commentator, one who definitely would have invited a lot of derision from people who didn't think that he was up to the task. And in fact, to my surprise, he was apparently being groomed to take over from Gary Lineker as the host of Match of the Day. So it seemed that Jermaine Genas was the BBC's new guy, you know? And yet, yesterday, the news filtered through, actually, while he was broadcasting on TalkSport, that the BBC have sacked him completely. Like, it's not just like a suspension, we haven't taken off one show or the other. He's been completely sacked from his contract. His contract was terminated because of alleged issues relating to workplace behaviour. He, however, was on the air, like I say, when this broke, and ended up giving a something of an interview about it. The allegations involve, it says here, digital communications, including texts, which were raised with the corporation a few weeks ago. He has said, you know, I can't talk about it. It's with the lawyers. I believe as of today, he's been dropped by his agency, and TalkSport themselves have said that there's no plans for him to appear on the station in the forthcoming future. So he's clearly going to come back with our response through his legal team. But out of nowhere, his career has gone completely up in smoke.
Has the BBC moved very fast because of the criticisms, Laura, about how slowly it moved when serious allegations were made against Hugh Edwards?
You'd have to imagine so, Matt. It took a lot of heat over that story, and let's be honest, it has to maybe, you know, really kind of set another tone, basically, based on what's happening here. And I think it was, it took people by surprise, I think, earlier in the week, how fast the BBC did move. But the fact now that he's been dropped by TalkSport and his agency, I suppose, suggests that despite his having to go to the lawyers, it does sound like
there's something serious here.
Yeah, pretty tough for him now ahead.
Okay, yep. Let's move on to other things. So what's this about younger viewers taking an interest in the televising of The Rose of Tralee, Laura?
So apparently The Rose of Tralee is in vogue again. Not that it ever wasn't in vogue, but it was always seen
as... It's in bloom,
I missed my chance there. You know, I suppose we all would have sat down to watch it over the years, but you'd maybe, you know, crack watch it. You'd watch it for the laugh and see, you know, it's a little bit maybe passé sometimes.
Ironically, if you will.
Yeah, thank you. So, but no, it's super popular now with the youngsters. That's you know, I don't know, is it the new presenter and is it...
Well, it's a new co-presenter.
Co-presenter, absolutely.
In fairness, Dahi O'Shea's been there for years and he's now been joined by Catherine Thomas. Did you watch any of it this year?
I have to admit, I barely knew it was on, Matt, and that's my own fault.
I have Rose of Tralee muted on my Twitter account for the last 10 years running or so, to the point that I genuinely forget it's on until it's on. And I'm working in a newsroom at the moment and I saw someone was going down to cover the Rose of Tralee and I was like, isn't that enough for months? So it's not something that I aspire to watch. But also, can I just say, I take serious issue with this young person designation as being 18 to 34. Let's extend that by about 6 years, shall we?
Up or down, though?
Up. I'm not out of the young zone because I've recently entered my 40s, am I? Maybe I am. Maybe it's
no,
over.
No, I think it's over for us, Dave.
It probably is. But it's not over for The Rose of Tralee, which, again, much like Electric Picnic, has incredible pulling power. So over 500,000 viewers tuned in general. A part of me wonders, with the young crowd, is it a combination of two things? Is it people watching from abroad who've emigrated from this country, who want to kind of have a taste of back home? Or is it also, I don't mean to bring emigration and the housing crisis into this, but is it young people living at home because they can't get a house and their parents have it on? I'm wondering what the actual data-driven reasons are why younger people out of nowhere have just...
I wonder how many parents are actually watching it. I certainly, and I like Dahi a lot, I didn't watch a minute of it. I had no interest in watching any of it. I don't think anyone in our house is watching it. So, I mean, I wonder if people in their 40s and 50s are actually watching it.
Well, the first thing we should have asked ourselves, if the young people are watching it, is it live-streamed on TikTok, or do they have a really strong TikTok presence? I mean, is there a social drive going on here? I don't know, because, like I said, I'm not really necessarily invest in it, but I do feel like people of my age group would have watched it rolling your eyes and going, oh my God, this isn't going to last, you know, but it is lasting and it's not going anywhere. And Well, it says there was
apparently there was over 500,000 engagement across Facebook, X, Instagram and TikTok, with posts by official accounts raking in over 5 million views across all platforms, which was an increase of almost 3 million compared to last year. So maybe maybe the social media game has in fact taken off massively for them.
Laura, yesterday with John Gibbons in the Environment Spot, we discussed this super yacht that was sunk off the coast of Sicily. It was an enormous amount of coverage this week because a British billionaire of Irish heritage drowned alongside members of his family and others. And John approached it very much from the warmer waters in the Mediterranean, and that caused the incident. But I think it also looks like that there were serious errors made in actually handling the safety of the boat, even in bad weather.
Yeah, I mean, look, whether you like it or not, it's the story of this this time of the year, and it's going on for over a week now. And this is the Baishian, I think it was called. And, you know, this was the unsinkable yacht. This is not a small boat. This is a 40 million euro structure with I think, the second biggest mast in the world. And experts looking at
Did you say unsinkable? Did you not ever hear the Titanic?
I know. Well, you know, this is why people are so interested in the story. It has all of those ingredients, you know. It reminded me of the, you know, the billionaires who took the sub down to see that, was it the Titanic?
Titanic. Well, in fairness, that was an incredible risk to take. You don't expect, I presume, when you're out in a boat in the Mediterranean, to think that you're going to get killed like that.
But do you know, John Gibbons may have a point, because the locals at the time, this freak storm, let's call it, struck around 4 a.m. and the locals did say they had never seen or felt winds as strong. So maybe there is something happening environmentally there that caused something this...
Although there's suggestions as well, though, there must have been slackness on the part of the crew, who must have been aware that this was coming and didn't batten down the hatches, so to speak.
And also, I think there is obviously an investigation has yet to take place, but some suggestions that it might have been listing. Apparently this boat can list up to 75 degrees, but that if they had left cupboards open for some reason, they would have taken on the water and that would have sunk it pretty fast.
Yeah, because it got too much water in. But there was another remarkable angle to the story, Dave, wasn't there? Because Mike Lynch had recently successfully beaten an American court case over the purchase of his company back in the early part of the century. And his co-defendant also died last weekend.
A couple of days prior, he was hit by a car in a different part of the world, killed apparently instantly. So
when he was out running, I think.
Yeah. So it's like you have these two guys who were on trial for this fraud thing, beat the charge that the people didn't think that they would. This was the company Autonomy. It was bought by Hewlett Packard for like $11 billion, and then afterwards they revised the value and said, "Wait a minute, this is actually $8.8 billion, like more than it actually appears to be." So that's what that was all about. There was the expectation that they wouldn't be acquitted on that. Then they were. And this was actually apparently the super yacht, incident came about as part of a celebration. And now, so you've got two guys involved, both perishing in what appears to be freak accidents in different parts of the world. And I really don't want to diminish the loss of life here. And 7 people have died, including today we found out, unfortunately, that his 18-year-old daughter, Hannah, her body was recovered today as well. But like, if you were, we've all read and seen pulp thrillers. We've all seen establishing things, you know, to kind of set the scene for something more conspiratorial. So, I mean, this is absolutely going to give conspiracy theorists all the ammunition that they need.
Indeed. Briefly, just to finish, I was around rural Ireland the week before last, and it's very noticeable how many towns and villages where you have shops that are now closed. And it's, but you do it around Dublin as well. I mean, even today I was seeing pubs and restaurants that are, is that after closing now as well? And I expected to see them open, to be actually taking advantage of the enormous amount of Americans who were into the Aer Lingus College's football classic. Dublin, I wonder what happens when the tourists go away in September and are not coming in the same numbers. How many more restaurants and pubs are we likely to see shut?
Oh, Matt, you know, we couldn't really bury our heads in the sand any longer on this. This is not something new. A lot of business people in Dublin especially have been sounding the klaxon on this for some time. There seems to be the perfect storm right now of, you know, wage increases, high cost of food, high rents, all of it for businesses, and they are really up against it here. And any time we interview them for any pieces, we had Andrea Horan write a piece for our Voices section there only yesterday, and she's a businesswoman and a broadcaster, and, you know, she said, yes, okay, there is a place for tourism. We have the US football influx this weekend, and yes, Dublin has to have a tourism base, but you cannot have that in on its own without bringing the city with you. You've got to make it a livable city for the people who live within the confines of this city. And at the moment, the city centre itself is becoming almost just a place where you might veer left of, because whether it's the cost or whether it's you're not feeling safe on the streets. There is an issue that really needs some tackling.
And livable is the exact word. I mean, all that seems to be happening, whether it's people I know or just seeing people online, is that everything is going up except wages. So everything is costing more. Even like your trip to the local supermarket is now costing you so much more. Everything, cinema tickets, you know, like this, we're talking about nightlife stuff, but obviously just everything from houses themselves to general household items. It's just more. People are being squeezed so much, and as a result, they just don't have the money. I know you were saying at the start of this segment, how do people have money for electric picnic? A good question. It could be people saving all year, being like, I'm not missing that one thing. But it has gotten to a point now where it's crunch time, and you can't just, you know, enjoy the wonderful things around you. But of course, if you can't enjoy the wonderful things around you, no one goes. They close one by one, and it seems like the government just don't care. It's the same old song. We keep singing it.
Well, maybe that they care, but they just don't know how to combat it.
Well, Matt, there is a budget incoming, and there are some very simple things they could do. You know, the VAT rate is one of them. It's been many calls for that through time. You know, it's not rocket science. We all got to dig out when things were tough during the winter when we needed to pay our own home bills. Maybe there's something that can be done there.
Well, isn't the government the biggest employer, which isn't requiring people to turn into work every day in the city centre? Anyway, we leave it there. Thank you very much, Laura Byrne and Dave Hanratty.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today.